Mindfulness Mode.
We open up the possibility of miracles.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, welcome to another episode of Mindfulness Mode. Today we're going to be talking about the Tao Te Ching, which is a topic I enjoy talking about, as you probably remember from other episodes. But we're going to be talking about how the Tao Te Ching and Christianity are perhaps somehow connected. And this is through a book that my guest has written. And I've had a chance to read some of that book already, and I'm quite fascinated. And my guest, well, I'm fascinated with him. He spent over four decades as a criminal trial lawyer. He worked as an advocate for neglected children and their families. He's a certified meditation teacher, and he blends insights from brain science, Eastern and Western psychology, and spirituality. I mean, we have a lot to talk about. My guest today is Bob Martin. Bob, are you in mindfulness mode today?
Oh, yes, sir, I am. I'm here for you.
It's great to have you here. I'm really happy that you could join me here on mindfulness mode. Well, tell me, what does mindfulness mean to you?
So, it kind of like I always remember that thing somebody once told me, that you can put a boat on a ship, but you can't put a ship on a boat.
Okay.
So, you can put meditation into mindfulness, but you can't say that all mindfulness is meditation.
Yeah.
So mindfulness is being awake. It's being here with some intentionality. The brain kind of works in a default mode where we have these thoughts that just kind of flow through our heads, like, what am I going to do tomorrow? And what am I going to cook for dinner? And I shouldn't have said that to that SOB. And, you know, all that kind of stuff just flows through our head. So I would call that being in default mode. But then when all of a sudden we put our attention on something, we're very present. I kind of think of like when you're driving in a car, you're kind of on muscle memory. The car kind of takes you to where you're going.
Yep.
But if somebody gets a little too close to your car, all of a sudden you wake up and there's this startling feeling like, uh-oh, I have to pay attention to this.
Yeah.
So mindfulness is kind of that sense of being more awake and more intentional and more present than just being in our blah, blah, blah default mode.
Right. Yeah, good point. Well, one of the things I read about you is that you began your career as a lawyer representing the mob in Miami. Tell us about mm-hmm. that. What was that like, and how did you end up there?
Well, I was working for I was working for Janet Reno, who was the state's attorney.
Right.
For Miami-Dade County, and I was the head of the Consumer Frauds and Economic Crimes Division. We had a task force with the feds, and we actually hit the mob up for $72 million.
Wow.
And shortly thereafter, I went out into private practice and hung my shingle out. And within a couple of weeks, I'll call him Johnny, came to visit me. And it was a little scary.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, you hit us for a lot of money. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, you know, you got to be good to do that. I'd like to send you some clients.
Wow, that is fascinating. So, and how did you feel when he said that?
Well, you know, I mean, I was in a private practice and my job is to represent folks. And so we had to have a real heart-to-heart conversation about what I was willing to do and what I wasn't willing to do, uh-huh. what the expectations were, and the like. And I found in a funny, funny way that they are very, they have a lot of integrity. They are very good for their word and they expect you to be very good for your word. So we were able to go several years, and I didn't do anything unethical. I didn't do any, it was in their best interest to have an honest lawyer, because if I have a good reputation in the courts, I can do more for them okay. than if I don't.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But then there came a time when, Johnny's son got arrested and then there was no saying no to him.
Oh.
And so I left Miami and moved to North Carolina.
Okay. I see. Very. Well, you've had quite a fascinating life. And reading your book, I learned why you got so interested in the Tao Te Ching and so interested in Christianity. Mm-hmm. Tell my listeners about that.
Yeah, so I grew up in an atheist family. My folks were Eastern European immigrants, and all of their families, all my ancestors, were wiped out by one group or another. And they came to the conclusion that there just could not be a God that would allow that to happen. So I kind of floundered around, and then, like I say, I was going out to a lot of these chrome and glass nightclubs with my clients, and my family life was hitting the skids, and I was bottoming out. Even though I managed to stay, working. But I was seeing a therapist, and there came a time when I had a major life question that I had to answer. And I asked him that, and he reached behind him and he got some coins. He started throwing the coins and making some calculations. And I'm paying this guy $65 an hour. And I'm wondering, like, what is he doing? And he opens up a book and he shows me it. And the name of the chapter is Retreat. And so I cursed him out. Stomped out.
Yeah.
And then I realized that it was the right advice. So I went back and I asked him about that, and he said, well, that was the I Ching. Uh-huh. And if we get a chance to talk about the I Ching, it would be really great, because it's a way of gaining mastery in life, and it's very Taoist. And so it turns out he was the English language editor for Master Niwa Jing, a 72nd generation Shaolin master from the Shaolin Temple.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, I was introduced to a system of virtue that it didn't require me to believe in anything that I couldn't just believe in.
Uh-huh.
And it taught me how to live life. And so it kind of changed me from being a mob lawyer to being a public defender.
Right. And then didn't you get quite in depth with the study of all of that?
Yes. I studied with Master Ni for 8 years.
Did you stay in the United States, or did you go and study elsewhere?
No, we were very fortunate, because Master Ni would come once a month to Miami.
Okay.
He had several groups in the United States, and he would come around every month and stay with us. But George was my therapist was his disciple and teacher.
Okay.
And so we studied under George, and then Master Ni would come every month. And he had to be the happiest man that I've ever met in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And could you just feel that happiness as soon as he stepped in the door?
Absolutely. He just had this energy about him that was marvelous. And if I can tell you,
yeah,
one time, you know, Taoism has a lot to do with going with the flow and being in a state which we call Wu Wei, which is doing, not doing, kind of like being in the zone of life.
Yeah.
And so we asked Master Ni once, what's it like to be you? You know, what goes on inside your mind? And his immediate response was, no rehearsing thoughts. So, I mean, he just never had to think about what he was going to do or what he was going to say, because he just was so masterful in living life that everything just became it just became automatic, so to speak.
Sure.
Like muscle memory.
Sure.
Like muscle memory.
Yeah, and I'm sure he was masterful at being careful about what his thoughts were.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I mean, although I don't know that he would ever, he would just speak, and whatever came up. I don't know that he had... I would love to be inside his mind and see what that looked like.
And did you learn to meditate from Master Ni?
Not exactly, because Taoism isn't as meditative as it is contemplative.
Okay.
So when I came to North Carolina, there weren't a lot of Taoists around.
Mm-hmm.
So I started attending a Buddhist temple.
Okay.
And it was there that I started to, that was about 1990.
Mm-hmm.
It was there that I started picking up meditation.
Okay.
And it was fits and starts for many, many years. I would practice for a while and then not practice, just like so many folks.
Yeah.
You know, it was fits and starts. And then finally I got a coach, And from then that point on, it's been just a steady practice.
Right. So you meditate every day then, do you?
Every day.
And tell us about your meditation practice. What does that look like?
My meditation is the very fundamental standard breath awareness. It is just a process of forming an intention to put your attention on your breath. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, your mind wanders. You know, a lot of people think that meditation is about quieting the mind or emptying the mind. It's really not. It's the process of, if I can say it this way. Have you ever been listening to somebody and then all of a sudden realize that you're not listening to them anymore?
Many times.
Yes. And you know that moment when you realize that you're not listening, it's kind of a startling feeling.
Yes.
It's so we call that waking up.
Yes.
Okay, because you were in a fog in the of rumination and projection. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, well, I'm not here. I'm somewhere else.
Right.
And it's like waking up. So when I meditate, I just simply do that over and over again. I put my attention on my breath and then my mind wanders. And then when I notice that it's wandered, kind of wake up and then return to my breath. And then my mind will wander again. But over the years, it wanders less and less. And I'm more and more here. So that's kind of a side effect of the practice. It's like you don't do it to empty your mind, but over time your mind empties.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Yes, it does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. How did you begin working with children? How did you get into that where you were an advocate for neglected children and their families?
So, once I practiced, it changes who you are.
Yes.
And what you want to accomplish in life. Money becomes, Miami was very, very good to me and my employment there was very, very good to me. And I can't honestly tell you if I couldn't afford to represent indigent clients if I would. I can't tell you that honestly.
Okay.
But I am in a position where I can do that, and so I can satisfy my soul. So one of the things where, the least of these, as Jesus would call them, show up is in parents that are addicted or they are they're alcoholic or they're mentally ill or they just don't have any parenting skills. Or they're caught up in a lot of life drama and they're just not taking care of their kids in the right way. So the Department of Social Services will step in and take the kids. My job then is to represent the parent, and they have about a year to be able to get their act together so that they can get their kid back. Mm-hmm. And my job is to help show them the way and what they need to do to get their kid back.
Okay.
And sometimes they do. And sometimes they don't.
Ah, very interesting. And what are some of the things that they have the biggest struggle with usually in order to get their children back?
Well, when you have a dual diagnosis of an addiction and mental health.
Right.
That's just a tough road to hoe.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then you met your wife. And wasn't that a whole new chapter in your life?
Well, absolutely. She's my second wife, and she is a bodhisattva, which is what the Buddhist term for a saint.
Okay.
And at the same time, she is a Bible literalist. We used to call them fundamentalists, but I don't like that word because it carries a lot of baggage.
Okay.
But she is a Bible literalist. She believes in the stories of the Bible as if they were historical. And I'm a Taoist Buddhist. And so I met her. And I guess the funny story is that I would be at home on Sunday. And I'm a little bit of a news junkie. So I'd be watching the news programs. And she would come over to go to church, to her Southern Baptist church, and had these sad eyes.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, honey, what's wrong? And she goes, well, I love you so much, but I just hate it that you're not going to go to heaven with me, because I hadn't been saved. And in her mind, it that's meant I would not go to heaven.
Sure.
And I would say to her, well, you know, I'm sad that you're not going to be reincarnated with me. You know, and she would slap me a little bit on the cheek and say, oh, you stop that.
That's a cute story. But what pulled you two together? Because it seems so surprising that you two ended up together.
She is the Taoist version of a saint. She is a person who, when she sees something in need or she sees a need, there's no debate in her mind about whether she's going to step into it or not step into it. She steps into it and does what's necessary and then walks away without expecting any kind of a pat on the back or anything else. And if you ask her, why did you do that? Or that's really, she would just shrug her shoulders and say, well, it needed to be done. She's just a saint in that way. She takes care. And it's very, very much, very Taoist and the like. And so that was the problem, is that we couldn't really speak about what we believed in. So what I started doing is I started taking the Tao Te Ching.
Yes.
A couple of lines at a time. And looking for things in the Bible that would be the relations. Because in my opinion, the teachings of Jesus and the Tao Te Ching and the teachings of Lao Tzu, there's not a hair's breadth difference between them.
Yeah, well, I was struck too when I studied the Tao Te Ching. Like, wow, this is just really beautiful, really pure, really biblical, really. But, you know, you took that and thought, well, I'm going to write a book about how they're connected. What an undertaking.
Well, it was a little bit at a time.
Yeah, I see.
It was a little bit at a time. A couple of couplets here and a couplets there. And then I would take a whole chapter. And after a while, what she said to me is, she goes, you know, Bob, I've been going to church for a long time, but there's no preacher that has ever taught me Jesus as well as you are writing about him. And it's not me that was writing it. It was the Tao Te Ching. All I was doing was finding the biblical terms. I'll give you an example. So Lao Tzu says that a leader should do their work and then go and then step down, because that way the work is emphasized and not the individual. So if you think about that in Christian terms, Christ came, he did his work, and then he ascended. So if you show that example of leadership, is when his work was done, he took his leave, which would be very much what Lao Tzu would advise of a leader.
Right.
So that's a way that you can take the advice of Lao Tzu and put it into a biblical term that, you know, a Western mind will go, oh yeah, I get it.
So I'm really interested in your feedback. Now, I've seen some of the feedback on the book online. Have you received any negative feedback from either side, Christian or Buddhists or anyone else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that usually comes from folks who have a my way or the highway feeling about their spirituality.
Right.
One person called it cultural theft.
Mm.
That cultural theft from both sides, and there's some pretty I would say some pretty mean messages that I've gotten about corrupting Christianity or people that are, you know, it's. People that have been in the church and have been harmed by the church, and certainly that's not everybody, but there are a lot of folks who's fundamentalist and my way or the highway, and you're not going to go to heaven and you're going to burn in hell. And all of those kinds of teachings early on have left people injured.
Yes.
And many people have left the church and they identify now as none. When they're asked, what's their religious affiliation? They say none. And those people are you know, I am heartfelt for that, because I do understand that organized religion can be harmful. And it, you know, it's just, it's a group. And anytime you form a group, you want to say that my group is different than another group, because why would you join my group if it wasn't different?
Right.
And then you want to say it's better than the other groups. So there's just a natural tendency to be chauvinistic about your group. And that chauvinism, that group patriotism has injured people, and they leave the church. But what I am heartfelt about is that they're like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's so much beauty in the teachings, that, you know, just to turn your back on all of it and mow your lawn on Sunday morning and not be associated with any group, whether it's a church or a sangha or any group that asks you to think about living a life that's about something greater than yourself, leaves people unhappy, and that wears on me.
Right, that makes sense. Well, I imagine you have a relatively thick skin as a result of working as a mob lawyer. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can take it, right?
Yeah.
But when you think of the Tao Te Ching, I mean, there's so many beautiful aspects of it. But what do you love the most about the Tao Te Ching? What pops into your head?
Well, lately, you know, I've been playing with this term, going with the flow.
Yes.
And, you know, most of us, when we hear the term going with the flow, we kind of think about laying in an inner tube, going down a nice, soft, calm river, merrily, 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 you know, life is but a dream.
Yeah.
But that's not really going with the flow, you know, because first you got to figure out what is the flow.
Yeah.
You know, is the flow contentious right now? Is it open? Is it, you know, in the I Ching, they identify 64 different flows. And the practice of practicing the I Ching is about identifying the flows and then figuring out what is the best and wisest way for me to conduct myself, considering the energy that's around me. You know?
Yeah.
So if nobody's listening to me, and we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
When you've got these wonderful, great ideas and you're all excited and you're going to go change the world and nobody's listening,
yeah.
You know, so when that happens, you know, you got to recognize nobody's listening to me right now. So, you know, let me be quiet and start thinking, because I know that the energy is going to change and there will come a time when people are open to me. So let me start preparing for that shift in energy now, so that when it does shift, I can move forward effectively and efficiently and make a difference. That's a lot better way of dealing with the time when people don't listen than it is getting frustrated and trying to force yourself on them.
Right.
And that's what the I Ching teaches. So that I think that, and the I Ching is the Tao, the Tao Te Ching is incorporated in the I Ching, and it's all really the same teaching. So that's what I am hoping to share right now the most, is that this idea of going with the flow wisely.
And you work one-on-one with people, don't you, to help them learn meditation and help them learn this? Tell us about that practice and how that works.
Well, I'm really excited. When I came to Elon, when I came to North Carolina, there's a university that is right here called Elon University. And so I started getting associated with that. And when I stopped lawyering or regularly, I kind of retired, they hired me as a professor. I heard from them about some work that was being done at Duke. Then I found out that Duke has created an entire system of teaching meditation to the Western psyche.
Right.
Because when I took my classical training, it was 2 years of sitting for 30 minutes a day and logging it and visiting with lectures and silent retreats for 2 years. And now, and you can't really say to somebody, hey, you want to go, you know, give up 2 years of your.
That's not going to go over well with most people.
That's not going to go over too well. So, but at Duke, they came up with this way of creating an introduction to meditation that's 5 weeks, 1.5 hour of class per week, 10 minutes of practice. And they created this digital infrastructure where you have an app, you practice for 10 minutes, you log the app on the app, and that log comes to my dashboard every morning. And I get to respond to it. So it's that makes it different from every other way of teaching meditation, because not only do we get the chance to be personal for 1.5 hours and teach new techniques, but every single day you get coaching. So if you have some idea that's not helpful, you don't have to practice it for a week before you get a little bit of an adjustment. So it's this daily coaching. And so so I went and got certified as a Koru teacher. And so now when someone wants to learn meditation, we just use their method.
And so you teach students and professors at the university, is that right?
I teach students, and for the professors and staff, I'm the mindfulness coordinator.
Okay.
I coordinate all the programs at the university, but then my private practice, you know, I teach people individually and in groups using this digital infrastructure online.
Tell us a story about someone that you've worked with that has really, as a result, had their life transformed.
So there's a lot. Usually by like the third week of the 5 week course, I start to see things in the logs like, oh, I just noticed that there are crickets outside my window.
Yeah.
Or I couldn't do my homework. And when I did my 10 minutes, then I could do my homework. A person that was really transformed is I worked with a CEO for a worldwide property insurance firm.
Okay.
And he had 4,000 people under his tutelage. And he was completely stressed, and he and his stress was about worrying about everything that and all of the things. Different countries had different issues and the like. So we worked together for a while, and the 5 weeks. And at the end of the 5 weeks, his stress level had gone way down, and he all of a sudden saw a way to delegate some of his responsibilities, and all of a sudden balance in his life became much more important to him. So he made a lot of adjustments, and he still maintained his same position. And so we entered into a mentorship relationship after the introduction. So I've been with him now for about 2 years, and he was your typical A personality, mm-hmm. Stressed out, top level executive. Now he takes vacations 3 times a year, and he's just enjoying life. And the other day he actually said to me, I love my life.
Wow. That's really fantastic. And it must make you feel great that you've helped him to get to that point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there are little victories. I think you mentioned something about bullying.
Yes. I always ask a question about that. Tell me your story about bullying.
Well, I was bullied when I was a child. I'm 60% Magyar, Hungarian, but we go back to the Huns and the Mongolians. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that, you know, my people are the ones that are playing field hockey with a lamb's head.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Big stallion, you know?
Yeah.
Big guys. Yeah. And I've always been big. And when I was in elementary school, all the girls used to call me cooties. And whenever I came near them, they would, scream, "Ooh, cooties," and run away.
Yeah.
And I think back on that. My mindfulness and meditation practice has finally gotten me to a point where I can have some insight into what might have been going on with them and the peer pressure that they had, and a certain forgiveness out of that.
Right.
But if I had been more mindful then, I might not have been so traumatized by it, because I would go home and cry a lot and like. So I sometimes I have classes with 12-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And one of the 12-year-olds related to me that he was on the playground and one of his friends, and he got into an argument and his friend pushed him down. And he got back up, he told me, and he had formed a fist, and he pulled his fist back, and he had a thought, and the thought was, "I hate you," was the thought that he had. But he said, and he told me, "But I noticed the thought, and I thought, I don't really hate him."
Interesting.
And so I felt my hand open up. And I said, "You're my friend," and I walked away.
Wow. That blows my mind. That's awesome. What a great story.
Yeah. So those are the kinds of things, you know, and sometimes I give lunch and learns, and I always end them with, "Thank you for letting me come here and do what I love doing."
Yeah, that's great. Wow, what a great story. And how long did it take you to write this beautiful book? And I don't even think I've mentioned the name of your book. Tell us the name of it and how long it took you to write it.
The name of it is I Am the Way, Finding the Truth and the Life Through a Biblical Reimagining of the Tao. And it follows the 81 chapters of the Tao. And actually, I have a version, a translation of the Tao Te Ching is in the appendix, so that you can look back at the original Tao Te Ching and then what my biblical reimagining is. And it took me 4 years to write it, but I have to admit that wasn't steady.
Right.
You know, again, did a little fits and starts and go away from it for a while. And
right.
Like, but yeah, it was over 4 years.
And that's one of the things you say at the beginning of the book is take your time to read this book. You don't have to read it in one sitting. You don't have to rush through it. Just take your time, because it's great material that you just need to let it sit on your mind for a while as you go through it. Wouldn't you agree?
I would. It's more in the nature of a devotional.
Yeah.
You know, I really wouldn't read more than one chapter or two at any one sitting.
Yeah, it's very well written and very easy to digest. You have a way of writing where it just flows and it feels natural. And, you know, some books are not like that, but this is a beautiful book to read. It really is.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mindful Tribe, I really recommend the book, because, I mean, the Tao Te Ching is a beautiful, beautiful thing to study, but then to read this book and to understand how you know, the connection is made, how Bob has made the connection between Christianity and the Tao, it's just a beautiful idea and a beautiful book. So kudos to you for taking on this challenge and doing it. It's just beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bob, as we move forward in the interview, I want to ask you 5 quick answer questions. So just 30-second answers are perfect.
Okay.
First one is this. So who is one person who has been a really powerful mindfulness influence in your life?
That has to be Master Ni.
Yeah.
Master Ni. Watching Ni. Yeah, it has to be.
Right, right. And my second question is about emotions. How has all this work with mindfulness helped you to deal with your emotions differently?
It provides me a deeper, quiet place, regardless of what's happening on the surface. You know, it's kind of like a storm occurring on the top of an ocean, but 20 feet down, things are calm.
Right.
So I can get mad as heck and still know that there's a place inside me that's just watching my anger. Yeah, kind of like the way the Irish talk about emotion. They don't say, I'm angry. They say, anger is upon me.
Yeah. Interesting. I like the way you put that. That's great. Well, let's talk about breathing. So what are your thoughts on breathing?
Breathing. Yeah. So the master, the student comes and says, breathing, breathing, breathing. Why are you always so hot on breathing?
Yeah.
So the master grabs his head and sticks it underneath the water of the fountain and holds it there for a while. And then he picks up and he goes, any questions?
Yes. It's...
So breathing is just a point of attention. This is a place to put your attention. But since you carry it with you wherever you are, it's not like a candle where if you are in the line at the supermarket and the lady in front of you opens up her three-ring binder with a million coupons and you're in a hurry, you have your breath.
Right.
You always have your breath. Yeah. Just bring your attention to your breath. And immediately, because you're already conditioned that that's my meditative state, you just bring your attention to your breath and all of a sudden,
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your book, I Am the Way. Are there any other books you would recommend?
Well, I did write another book. Uh-huh. It's a novel.
Okay, tell us about it.
Okay. So it was a few years after 9/11, mm-hmm. and I was experiencing a world where everybody was going around killing in God's name. And I kept thinking, and what or who or what God is way beyond my pay grade. Not something I'll find out if there is a life after death, I'll find out then. But anyway, I kept wondering that if it was conscious, if God was conscious, he might be sitting up there thinking, it's not really my intent. So what would happen if he came down and shared that? So how could I bring God down? So I brought God down to the earth in my novel by the ticker tape at the bottom of your television would start to show messages. You're all my children, God. Your world is an Eden. Take care of it, God. And these messages starting appearing in every language all over the world, no source is identifiable. And how would the world react to that? So that's called The Children of Abraham, because I deal with and the funny, crazy part about it is I wrote it in 2008. I just looked at it, and the very beginning scene is Captain Nadav of the Israeli Defense Forces being sent into Gaza to bomb a terrorist stronghold, and he's asking about collateral damage. I wrote this in 2008.
Wow.
And it hasn't changed in all this time. How sad is that?
It's so sad. Yeah, it really is. Well, thanks for sharing that about your other book. And, are there any apps that you would recommend?
Yes, absolutely. The two apps, I think that the apps like Calm and other ones that talk about relaxation is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to diminish it at all. Because it's only when we relax that our mind is free and open to see more widely. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But if you want to learn meditation, first of all, a coach, you can't beat a coach. You can't beat a live human coach. But if the next best thing would be Balance, an app called Balance, which actually AI interviews you and pegs what your level is and then reminds you to practice every day, and it gives you what to practice and it progresses you along the meditation path. And it's pretty darn good. It's pretty darn good, as a teacher, as an AI teacher, it's pretty darn good. The other app that is really, really great is Insight Timer. Insight Timer, it started out, the people that do it give it away free because they're into wanting meditation to spread. You can pay a donation every year, which I do. It is basically, its basic center is that it has a programmable timer where you can set your bell, you can set the time, you can put interval bells in, background noises, you can completely program your timer. But the community, it's like a Facebook for meditators. And whenever you meditate, it gives you a little map of the world and it shows you everybody else that was on Insight Timer all over the world that was meditating with you. And you start to make connections and the like. And my wife and I are going to go to Europe in a couple of in a year. And I already have invitations from meditators all over Europe.
Wow.
To come visit. So and if you're interested in Cornfield, there's a Cornfield group and there's a this group. So in terms of the getting support from a community. And it also has all the other stuff like sleep music and, you know, courses you can take. But I think that is, in terms of support and community, that's the best.
Yeah, I really enjoy Insight Timer as well. It's fantastic. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I recommend it. And your website, IamTheWayBook.com. Any place else you would like our guests to go? Is that the best place?
Well, that's for the book. And if you're interested in meditation, I have a website. And if you go there and you go to the resources tab, I have 56 gigabytes of videos and audios and guided meditations and documents and instructional pages and the like that are free to download.
Wow. That's a lot of material. And that's a wiseandhappylife.com, right?
It's a wiseandhappylife.com/meditation.
Okay.
Okay, you can't get there from a wise and happy life.
I see.
You have to do the /meditation.
I'll put that in our show notes at mindfulnessmode.com. And before we wrap up our interview, Bob, do you have any final words of advice for our Mindful Tribe listeners?
None of us should ever think that we know everything.
Good advice.
You know, once we are an expert at something, you know, we can predict the future in the moment. We can predict what's going to happen. And sure enough, that's exactly what's going to happen. And if we back away and say, well, maybe I don't know everything and maybe I can't say what's going to happen, we open up the possibility of miracles.
Beautiful.
So
yes,
and also I would say this: we have a responsibility to awe. We should have awe in our life. So go to the top of a mountain, or go to the seashore, or go wherever it is that you experience awe, and relive that feeling, and play with that feeling, and create the neural pathways that make it easy to feel awe, to feel awe. Awe is the positive. It is the positive side of PTSD.
Oh, that's interesting.
Think of it, right? Because PTSD is something traumatic that happens and it changes the way that you think immediately.
Yes.
Awe is the same thing. When you experience awe, it changes you.
Fascinating. So I like that way to look at awe. And mm-hmm. I don't have guests talk about awe very often. So I'm glad you brought up that topic.
We have to cultivate it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on Mindfulness Mode. I've truly enjoyed our conversation.
So have I. It's been wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. All the best to you. Bye now.
Bye now.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, thanks for being here today. I hope you enjoyed this interview today as much as I did. And I wanted to point out that my last episode, which you may or may not have had a chance to listen to, with Lindsay Rind, it was an episode that really meant a lot to me because Lindsay is a person who was having a lot of challenges. She was having anxiety. She was having pain. She was having stress. And I worked with her using hypnosis and coaching and took her to the other side of that. And I would really encourage you to go and listen to her story because it was quite powerful. And I'm just so grateful to have the opportunity to have had clients like Lindsay, whom I can help them, I can work with them using hypnosis, and maybe you or a friend of yours or a connection to you is experiencing anxiety, stress, some sort of feeling as though they're stuck, they can't move forward. And you know, hypnosis can be something that can resolve that rather quickly. And it is really a powerful way to deal with some of these challenges in life. So send me an email if you're interested, or pass on my name to a friend or a relative that you might know who is experiencing some of these challenges. My email is bruce@mindfulnessmode.com, and I'd be thrilled to sit down and have a free consultation with you or the person you're suggesting, and we can work through this, and there can be a solution, there can be a better way to live. So with that, take what we've learned today to reach new heights of calm, focus, and happiness. Stay in the mode.